Hey everyone, my online course on the rehabilitation of the fitness athlete with Dan Pope is on sale this week. If you want to work with higher level fitness athletes and help people get back into the gym after an injury, this is the course for you. Head to MikeReynolds.com/fitathlete to learn more and sign up this week.
On this episode of the Ask Mike Reynolds Show, we talk about if we can really change someone's posture, what we do with anterior hip pain when somebody has pain with hip extension, and how we decide if an athlete should stop playing their sport.
The Ask Mike Reynolds Show. Helping people feel better, move better, and perform better.
Welcome back, everybody, to the latest episode of the Ask Mike Reynolds Show. I'm up here at Champion PT and Performance up in Boston, Massachusetts. I'm here with Lenny Macrina, Dave Tilley, Dan Pope, Mike Scaduto. We have two awesome new physical therapy students to introduce today. John's been here a couple weeks. Brooks has been here 1 week, but already making a big impact. These guys are doing a good job. First episode of Questions to Ask, so we'll see. We'll see how it goes. I don't know. We'll see. I want to see what you guys have for the nicknames, because I don't have good nicknames right now. So we'll go in order of seniority here. We had the totem pole here, but John LaRue from Clarkson University in New York, the state of New York, right?
And his nickname?
So John LaRue, and the nickname?
LaRue is on fire.
John LaRue is on fire.
What do you think? It's a work in progress.
I want to see it.
Nobody will get John.
It's going to be tough. To, hey, LaRue is on fire. Come here, I need you.
Yeah, it's a tough nickname.
LaRue
yeah.
is also another like pop star. She had a song Bulletproof, so we could go with that one.
You're so trendy.
That's reaching.
I don't even know what you're talking about. All right, John LaRue from Clarkson University. Brooks Klein from UNLV. What's
Brooksby Village, the best retirement home in the North Shore.
Oh, all right, Dave's fired from the nickname game.
Dave's had too much coffee.
You're
going to tweet it, you might.
Pinpointed one square mile.
Dude, we just got Brooksby Village so many plays.
Brooks, Calvin Klein from UNLV are here. We're going to ask some awesome questions. Who's first?
I'll take it.
All right, LaRue, you're on fire, buddy. What do we got?
All right, so first question is from Tom from Atlanta. Mike, I'm a current PT student. We see so many patients with poor posture, which affects how the patient functions in a variety of ways. We are taught to address posture first. How realistic is it for the patient to physically correct their static posture?
Love it. All right, posture. This is actually probably a big question. I feel like we could talk like this for an hour. So who wants to start? Like, can we affect posture? Can our treatments, our manual therapy, our exercises affect posture? Why don't we start with, do we think it can, and then maybe talk about how? Or have not. Who wants to start? Babe, you want to go?
I will try. Yes. So I think the short answer is it can if the patient follows up with stuff. So like just expecting one session of manual therapy or exercise to be like turn you into like amazing is not going to be probably realistic. But if people are, it's education and like consulting is more important. It's like being aware of the fact that if you, as you had written in an article, if you sit for 7 hours, you should reverse your posture and do something that's the opposite. If you stand all day because you're a strength coach, you should probably do something to reverse your posture the other way. I think it's much more about the education we give someone to be variable in their positions than it is like working on their lats and making them sit straight up. And I think that we're finding that there is no perfect posture. As Stu McGill says, the best position for your back is a variable one, not a, you know.
There's probably two ways we could probably define posture for a question like this too. Is like, I mean, you can have long-term chronic adaptations, but also some short-term things, right? Like, if my neck was really sore, I might come in with my arm up, kind of like protecting my shoulder, or you know, contracting some tone in my upper trap or something like that. You can have a dramatic impact on their short-term posture if you work on that. But chronic adaptations is an interesting question. I mean, look at some other professions like massage therapy, like not to pinpoint one or anything, but massage therapy tends to put a lot of focus on posture. And I mean, I think they help people, right? So I mean, I think it's, I don't know if it's best to say like, you can't fix posture. I think you just have to understand, you know, what that is. But what do you guys do? Any thoughts? I mean, I got some more thoughts, but I'll let you guys talk.
I think it really depends on the individual too. I think,
maybe a little bit more in the strength conditioning and maybe massage world. And I think in the general public, I think posture is something that people understand is an enormous cause of pain, right? I think what you'll find if you start looking through a lot of the medical literature is that it doesn't really correlate as nicely as we may have thought. Like, you can find some research that shows, like, anterior pelvic tilt is correlated with low back pain. You can find some that doesn't, right? I think, because I actually looked through some literature in the past few months because I was pretty curious. For the shoulder, it seems like posture is maybe not as important as you might think, but still probably pretty important in the neck and the low back based on the research that I read, right? So it's one of those things where I think that the therapist has to think about whether or not posture is actually a problem, right? And for that individual, you'd have to have an individual catered approach, right? So someone like who has thoracic outlet syndrome, we'll just throw out an intervention, I could definitely see how positioning the shoulder blades are important, and you might have someone out there saying, like, oh, position the shoulder blade is not important for anything, right? I've read this research article. So.
Yeah, good point.
I think it's just important that you use your brain and use critical reasoning skills and question, you know, the person in front of you and just make sure the intervention is important for that person and helps them.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think that's good, too, and I think, like, I think everybody wants to talk about posture and say, well, posture can limit overhead reach or limit stuff like that. Static posture itself is fairly irrelevant by itself in my mind, right? But if your static posture correlates to your functional movement deficits, then I think you could kind of argue that a little bit more. If I sit like this all day, right, and I'm literally, this is my posture sitting, but then I can touch my toes, I can do a deep squat, then what's cares about my posture, right? Because for whatever reason, I have the dynamic ability. So, I mean, if you're spending that much time staring at posture and trying to fix posture, I think you really got to correlate it. Do you have, like, movement deficits, right? And I think movement deficits are probably more important than static posture assessments.
And symptoms.
And symptoms, right, yeah. I mean, do you have symptoms with certain things? Does a postural position cause symptoms? Do you have an increase in pain when you sit, right? Then, okay, then maybe you should work on some of your postural changes from sitting. But I don't know. I mean, I've looked at it. I mean, you could, like, say you do soft tissue on something that, like, appears tight. I mean, I think, okay, I mean, you may have some transient changes and stuff. But there's no question to me if you actually look and you have somebody that takes care of themselves, that does self-myofascial release, that does variable movements, right? Always trying to change the posture. We call it reverse posturing, right? Like, I sit all day, so I'm going to do extension-based stuff. And then, more importantly, probably put a layer of strength on top of that, right? We see it all the time. It takes time, right? But, like, if you sit all day and then you get in the gym and you work on, like, you know, posterior chain, posterior dominant exercises, there's definitely a big impact on how those people kind of look posturally, but more importantly, how they move dynamically, right? So, anything else?
We're overcoming a societal belief that posture affects your pain. So, schools are still presenting it to students. So, to try to, when somebody comes to us, like I said, society is still dictating that this is going to directly cause pain. So we have to overcome that and educate.
Awesome. Nice. All right. Next question. Let's do this. Calvin.
Next up, Jeff from St. Louis. Can you mention some causes of anterior hip pain when going into hip extension and some ways to treat it? FYI, dealing with a baseball pitcher's push-off leg.
All right, so rear leg in a baseball pitcher, but all right, anterior hip pain during hip extension. What do you think? Dave, your world has a lot of this. Dan, you deal with a ton of this.
Yeah, I'll give my quick thoughts, and then I know that Dan just recently sent me an article that kind of looked at some of these concepts. So
sweet.
At a baseline level, the work that I think I'm kind of deep into with the hip is in parallel to what you guys have done with, you know, James Andrews and Kevin and stuff like that, but it's the socket is slightly different, right? It's deeper in the hip, which means that the shoulder will slide out, the hip will not, right? So what they're thinking in some of the medical literature from Dr. No and Dr. Bird is that instead of somebody just sliding out in a direction, so think about if you're extending your hip, you're going to run out of room between the femoral neck and the posterior lateral acetabular wall eventually, right? Whether you're a gymnast and it's super more range of motion or you're a baseball player and pushing off, you might hit your femoral neck on the lateral wall. And as a result, it fulcrums out. So like if I'm running and I put my leg back, I hit my wall, I may tip out the front slightly, right? And I think there's some really interesting research showing that, the iliofemoral ligament has two bands, medial and lateral, that directly overlie the femoral head. And then you have the psoas and some adductors that work as flexors to essentially prevent that from happening. So we see people who over years of pushing off or maybe not training the best sprint mechanics or things of that nature will start overloading their static stability, and then they start going through their labrum, and then their psoas blows up because they're trying to contain the femoral head, or their adductors try to contain the femoral head. So I personally think that people have a double-edged sword where end range flexion with squatting, the strength conditioning that maybe they're not ready for, it's not fit for their anatomy, may predispose some pinching, and then you have somebody who also will sprint and have it happen the other way. So I think the extreme ranges of motion are kind of what we're finding is provocative because of the difference in acetabular shape being deeper. So they,
so
treatment,
a little anterior instability,
right,
would be one, and then treatment, right, just get them super strong and probably avoid excessive hyper extension. You're going too
lean
far
forward in extension. Your sprint mechanics, maybe try to do some med ball stuff and retrain how to push off your back.
Get out of hyper extension a little bit, right? Yeah. So you don't fulcrum anterior.
And less is more with soft tissue work. If it's eccentrically overloaded, don't go nuts. It's like provocative.
What do you got, Dan?
I was going to say some of the same thing. I think it's the extension, the external rotation is probably going to be forcing that ball forward, so they get some instability because of that. Where we see it a little bit, we see it a lot of complaints in sumo deadlift when they finish their pull because you're externally rotated and then you're extending. And I think for some people, the hips just don't like that position. They're getting increased stress coming anteriorly, and they have kind of that same pinching sensation that sometimes people have in the bottom of the squat as well. So initially, I think it's probably good, just like you said, to unload it and then slowly start to progress the range of motion first, and then over time, making sure that your volume is adequate so that you're not tearing up your hips and just doing too much work in general.
Right, and you know, this particular person too, if it's a baseball pitcher with lead leg, I mean, it's not, you know, it's, you get a decent amount of hip extension during lead leg, so I think that kind of matters to all this. What do you guys think, Mike, Len, anything else like anterior hip? I mean, there's some other classic stuff like psoas type stuff, or even, you know, FAI based things. But I don't know, do those happen with hip extension though? It's kind of more flexion based, right?
I think only for the mechanism of eccentric overload.
Yeah, I think it would be eccentric overload. And I think the question is about baseball, which we've alluded to, but I think keeping in mind, if he's a baseball player and a gymnast, they oftentimes are hypermobile if they're decent at their sport.
I thought you did both sports. I was like, rare.
No,
unless you're me.
Dave sees us a lot.
You have to meet a gymnast that has good throwing mechanics.
Right, see my Instagram story daily. But if they have, they're relatively hypermobile, now they're really relying on their dynamic stabilizers as like the shoulder and the hip as well to try to keep that ball within the socket. So if they have that fulcruming that he alluded to, then you got psoas and other soft tissue around the joint trying to grab on to prevent a relative, what would be a subluxation or excessive mobility. So, you know, not surprised it's baseball. So now what are we going to do? We got to maybe change mechanics. We got to look at posterior chain strengthening. Calm down the iliopsoas. Maybe he's relatively anteriorly tilted, something like that. I don't know. I don't know the whole presentation and get them, you know.
And a mistake. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, a mistake I made building off what you just said is that I used to think, oh, anterior hip pain, psoas, let's go nuts. And I made people so much worse, I promise. I've seen a lot of gymnasts and other people who
the other way.
Just get, you know, soft tissue work blasted or they lay in a kettlebell, certain people, right? It's crazy to do that. Right, because you don't know how many layers behind the psoas are provocative.
Does anyone know who you're alluding to right now?
They do.
Oh, okay, good. I was going to add up.
Yeah, I would just say, like, you guys all kind of touched on it, but you really have to assess and kind of figure out what you think is going on, whether it's bony anatomy, static stabilizers, muscles. Like, you need to kind of narrow that down because it seems like the treatment varies depending on what's going on.
So good diagnosis. Person. I feel like a lot of people will assume if it's anterior hip pain that it's psoas, for example. So, like Mike's saying, good, I like that. You know, get a good diagnosis, get a good evaluation process. Don't just assume. Because that is an area you probably assume things on and maybe get in trouble.
I couldn't tell you how many doctors sent me a note, said hip flexor strain, and it's really some sort of impingement going on. So
right.
Treatments are very different.
Doctors.
Well, doctors are good. Sorry, I love doctors.
Doctors.
Great episode.
Doctors. Yeah. Doctors. LaRue is on fire. We gotta order the next episode. We're gonna.
I think it's your delivery is the problem.
Everyone's challenged to have better nicknames next episode. LaRue is on fire. What's next?
Right. Billy from Connecticut. Love the show. What factors do you consider when deciding whether or not it's necessary to remove an athlete from sport to be successful with rehab?
Ooh, this is these are.
I don't know what the question was.
I should have spread these questions. These are good questions there. So. How do you know, so, you know, in the physical therapy scene, or I guess even if you're a strength coach, athletic trainer, whatever it may be, but how do you know when the person needs to essentially abstain from sport? right? How do you know like what you should play through and not play through? But Len, we deal with this all the time in baseball. You want to start this off?
Yeah, I mean it's really getting in your in the athlete's head, and they have to understand what their normal day-to-day pain is. Baseball players are just always in pain, so you got to figure out, is this something different? Is this a different spot? Is this something different happened? Did you pitch more than normal? Where are we in the season? Where are we in a contract potentially? There's so many different variables to consider, but has the pain changed? Is it not your normal soreness that you felt every day of your baseball career? Is it something new? Is it a sharper pain? Is it now some kind of ridiculous type stuff going on? Is there something different that we can to try to justify me pulling you out for a period of time? And what are the implications if we did pull you out? That's going to play a huge role too. Like, if you come out of the game and somebody replaces you, what's that status then that you're going to be able to get back in? So
Mike, midsummer, right? You're golfing. All you want to do is golf. And they come see you with back pain. And you say, like, I think you should take some time off for golf. And then they fire you and go see another therapist that tells them that they can still golf.
Exactly.
I mean, what do you do? I mean, when do you tell them you can't golf?
I think you really, really, and Lenny said, you have to get into their belief system with this. Like, if golf is the most important thing going on in the summer, and they have some discomfort in their back while golfing, but golf is super important to them. I think if they're just a recreational golfer, I think it's okay to find a strategy to continue to let them play golf if it's not making their symptoms dramatically worse.
So a different strategy, like having them alter their swing or play at a lower percentage effort or something? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so I think it's okay to maybe give them some strategies to change their swing a little bit. I don't know if that's necessarily the number one way I would go. I'd probably modify the volume that they're playing. Say they're playing five times a week. I say, okay, let's play once or twice a week to start, see how it goes, and kind of give them a gradual return. And it obviously will vary case to case. Like, some people, you may recommend, you know, not playing golf. But I would say, if you think that they're going to really discount everything you say after you tell them they can't play golf, I think that's it's kind of a, you know, I don't know. It is multifactorial. It's tricky.
You got to put it together.
Right? Is their performance, is obviously their performance is affected. Is their fastball less? Are they giving them more home runs? Are they shanking the ball more? Yeah. You know, it's going to be hopefully an obvious justification where you can, like, let the athlete realize it may be time to pull back a little. And, you know, and CrossFit as well. You know, you guys see it all the time. Gymnastics. It's these overloaded sports where you just keep playing volume, 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 catches up, and then you can figure out, like, what happened retrospectively. Did we train enough? What are we doing training in the off season, the preseason? What are we doing now for maintenance stuff? There's always something missing in their program. We get a ton of kids that come to us in the middle of the summertime dying. That because they're not getting the arm care, they're not getting the maintenance on their shoulder, and then you give them a little love, and now their performance goes up. So I think there's so many different variables that you can affect.
I always try to explain to everybody that my job is to either keep you on the field or get you out there as fast as I can. But sometimes it just comes down to what's in your best interest. And a lot of times athletes are thinking short term, I just want to play today, I just want to play today. And I think one of the things we do really well here is we kind of help them understand the long-term implications, right? You're a sophomore in high school, and you're getting ready for the baseball season, and you're a little sore. You know, I don't know. I mean, I just don't know how important your sophomore year high school season is to your chances of playing in college or even maybe getting drafted, right? We may say, like, let's be a little conservative. You know, we still have the summer. You know, let's focus on junior year, whatever it may be. I mean, there's so many ways that we have to put it in. I think we're like the rational outsiders that can kind of have the common sense and kind of put that into play too as well, because it's not just physical, right? I mean, there's going to be an obvious person. Somebody comes to you, they're a hamstring strain. It's black and blue, and they have no range of motion and strength. Okay, no brainer. They can't play, right? But we're talking about the people that are in pain here. And look, we always say, like Mike said, adjust the volume. Like, you're not gonna like blow out necessarily if it's you don't have structural pathology. Let's just see what you can handle. If you're making progress, then great. We can adjust the load in a positive way. If you're setting yourself back or kind of like, you know, staying in neutral, then maybe we're just doing too much, right? And I think that's how I would kind of put it together. So
it's almost like Lenny talked about the implications of, if they come out of the game, is someone going to take their spot? But if they stay in the game, are they going to get seriously injured, or are you going to cause further harm? Like, are you comfortable allowing it? Like,
risk reward.
Yeah.
And sometimes, look, it's game seven of the World Series. Sometimes you take that risk, right? Or you have the most important showcase in the world this weekend to get into this D1 college that you've been shooting for. Maybe you're willing to accept that risk. Or maybe there's another showcase in a month, and we'll talk you out of going to this one, because the last thing you want to do is go to a showcase at 80% of you and show everybody that you stink. Because now on your resume, it shows that you aren't good at your sport, right? Because they don't know you're injured if you're trying to hide it. So it's good. You know, lots of good factors. I think that's, you know, I think that's a good play to kind of answer it. But awesome. Well, thanks, guys. Another great episode. We appreciate everything. Head to MikeRinald.com. Click on that podcast link. Ask us questions. Go to iTunes. Rate, review, subscribe us. Subscribe to us on Spotify now. And we'll see you guys on the next episode.
Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. If you have a question you'd like us to answer, head to MikeRinald.com/podcast and fill out the form to submit your question. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast. And please share this with your friends to help spread the word. It would really mean so much to us. Please check out all my online courses, articles, newsletter, and more at MikeRinald.com. There's always a ton of great perks for my newsletter subscribers. And be sure to check for my other podcast, the Sports Physical Therapy Podcast, where I go deep into topics and interview leaders within our field. See you on the next episode.